In this session, we're going to talk about how you can identify and learn the knowledge and skills you need to master in order to achieve your vision and purpose. As we've repeated throughout this Neuropsychology of Self-Discipline program, any goal worth achieving takes preparation and careful, patient work. As easy as running is, as natural as it seems, you wouldn't go out today and run a marathon without months of preparation, slowly working up to 3 miles a day, then 7, then 10, then 15, gradually working toward the 26-mile goal. You would start marathon conditioning with a careful program of nutrition, stretching exercises, reading, talking to other runners, and even a doctor's checkup. You'd determine what knowledge and skills you'd need to accomplish your goal of 26 miles, and you'd accumulate the knowledge and skills step by step until your goal was achieved. The goal of this session is to help you learn how to learn. Many of us were programmed years ago with the belief that there are certain things we just cannot learn. We were tracked in school into one path or another because of test results which told us we had no aptitude for a particular subject area, or by teachers or counselors who believed we were best suited for one discipline over another. In some cases, the stereotype was as blatant as girls take home economics, boys take shop. In other cases, the grounds for tracking could have been racial or economic, or some other person's perception of our intelligence. In a now famous psychological study, new teachers in an elementary school were told that certain students in their classes were gifted and certain others were slow. In truth, there was no measurable difference in the student performance up till that time. But by the end of the following semester, the students labeled gifted were doing work above grade level, while the slow students were performing below. The only thing which had changed was the teachers' attitudes toward the children. Much of our response to learning has been based on what we've been told about our ability to learn. In this session, you'll learn how to break through the learning barrier and clear away the mental blocks that have you falsely entrapped in the belief that you can't learn certain difficult subject matter and skills. You'll learn how to learn all over again, this time recognizing that your potential is as unlimited as your imagination. You, like other self-disciplined achievers, will know how and when to acquire the essential knowledge and skills that will enable you to achieve your goals. In our research into human achievement, we found that the world's most persistent and successful people had developed a four-step approach to learning that ensured they would successfully acquire the knowledge they need to achieve their goals. The process is a simple one. Listen carefully as we go over its basic components. First, they're able to determine what new skills and knowledge they must learn in order to achieve their goals. Second, they call into play their belief in their ability to learn. They believe they can learn any subject or skill, no matter how difficult it might be. Third, they're patient. They understand that acquiring new knowledge and skills is often a slow, step-by-step process that requires systematic trial and effort. No matter how young or how old, the learner must go through the same progression of acquiring knowledge and skills. And fourth, they develop their own effective, personalized system for learning, a simple learning formula they can apply to any subject matter to efficiently and thoroughly master goal-relevant knowledge and skills. Let's delve into each of these steps in turn to see how they can be applied to your own learning efforts. The first step of a learning program to acquire a new skill can be approached much like the planning work we dealt with in Session 7. You can design a similar flowchart with an activity box labeled Start and a box labeled Finish. The intermediate steps are, of course, other activity boxes. Activities which must take place at the same time must appear one above the other. The activities that follow each other in chronological order are listed from left to right. The activity that comes first is to the left of the activity on the right. Any research you have to do, consultations you have to make, background materials you have to accumulate, all are entered on your flowchart in the proper activity boxes. Let's assume for a moment you're just about to begin your first year of college. Your ambition is to become a neurologist. You know that to get into medical school, you have to excel in college pre-medicine. The thought of taking 4 years of math, chemistry, and biology seems pretty intimidating, and becomes even more intimidating when you realize that you have to have almost a straight A average in those subjects to be even considered for medical school admission. The intimidation would quickly go away if you could develop a 4-year visual network plan that outlines specifically what you had to learn and in what order you would have to learn it, year by year. Then upon viewing the completed network plan, look at it and develop the deep inner belief that you have it in yourself to master each of the subject matter areas. Let's work through a visual network plan for successfully completing college pre-med. Granted, most of you listening to this program won't want to become medical doctors, but this example is applicable to any situation in which new knowledge and skills must be learned. Turn to diagram 9.1 on pages 48 and 49 of your study guide. I'll pause a few moments while you find diagram 9.1. As you can see, there are three visual network plans. The first one outlines the chronological steps to becoming a neurologist. We call this a macro plan, with the objective of becoming a neurologist. Below that is the micro plan with the objective to graduate in pre-medicine in 4 years with a minimum 3.5 grade point average. The micro plan is broken down into two levels. The first level is visually represented in two steps: the start, labeled number 1, and graduate with a Bachelor of Science in pre-med, labeled number 3. This first level has actually been extracted directly from the macro plan. Now look at page 49 and the level 2 diagram. As you can see, level 2 is an expanded version of level 1. Through the study of the college course catalog, and after talking at length with college advisors, you have identified the pre-med requirements and have broken them down into a prerequisite chronological order. This visual network plan then serves as the step-by-step map for completing your pre-med program, the first step in your macro objective of becoming a neurologist. As you look at the visual network plan for completing pre-med, what type of emotions do you experience? Do you feel intimidated at the prospect of excelling in the hard sciences? Do you doubt your ability to learn such difficult subjects, and to learn them so well that you finish each course at the top of your class? If you feel intimidated and experience doubt, then you probably won't make it. If you look at the plan and feel, deep down inside, that with enough effort, study, and application, you can master each of the courses, then you'll probably succeed. The difference, you see, is really not in ability or intelligence. Rather, it is an attitude, your belief in yourself. The belief in yourself as someone who is capable of learning is 90% of the learning hurdle. The other 10% is single-minded application mixed with ability. The belief in yourself as someone who has the ability to learn is the second step involved in the self-disciplined achiever's pursuit of goal-related knowledge and skills. Much of your own belief in yourself as someone who is capable of learning complex material may have been educated right out of you in school for a variety of reasons, some of which we explored at the beginning of this session. One major reason for this belief is a vicious cycle people get caught up in early in their learning experience. Take math, for example. Many people have learning blocks when it comes to math. They feel that they just don't have the aptitude to learn complex mathematical concepts. And they can prove this lack of ability to you from their grades and success in math classes. What most of these people lack is not the aptitude for math, but the application of self-discipline. Math requires progressive learning. You have to master one concept before you can go on to the next. If you miss a few steps in between, then it's really easy to get lost. And once you get lost, it's nearly impossible to catch up. To stay on top in math requires a daily effort of study. Most people who enter math because of their lack of self-discipline think that they can get by with a minimum of effort. Most of these people are intelligent. They can get by in most other courses by just coasting. they think they can do the same thing in math. But soon they get behind and can't catch up, and usually do poorly in the course. Then, after such an experience, they label themselves as poor in math. They carry this label with them throughout their lives. This label shades most of their decision-making when it comes to choosing courses of study and careers. Such people will avoid careers that require mathematical understanding because they think they don't have the aptitude. Actually, they probably had and have the aptitude, but not the attitude. Their life's potential was stunted by a false assumption. All they needed was someone to teach them the value and skill of self-disciplined application. Most of the people we studied in the creation of the Neuropsychology of Self-Discipline program were not extra intelligent, but they did have a firm belief in their ability to learn anything and everything. To them, 90% of their ability to learn was their belief in their ability to learn. If you examine your own positive role models, you'll probably discover that few of them test out at genius level on intelligence tests. Most people think that Albert Einstein, for example, was a mathematical genius, when in actuality, he flunked his college entrance exams and was a poor student in mathematics. As a youngster, he envisioned himself one evening riding through space on a beam of light. In his imagination, he sensorily experienced the theory of relativity. He knew what it was, but he was not able to explain it to others in a language they could understand. The only language was mathematics. Driven by his vision, he forced himself to learn mathematics. For Einstein, it was a day-by-day struggle, but he finally developed enough mathematical knowledge to simply express his experience mathematically. Einstein's theory of relativity and its mathematical expression ushered in the age of nuclear energy. Another scientist, whom most people attribute genius, was the inventor of the laser, Dr. Theodore Meiman. While at Stanford University, he flunked his PhD oral exams and had to take them over again. Learning didn't come easy for him. It was a daily, step-by-step struggle. Baseball hitting great and CyberVision role model for its baseball neuromuscular training video cassette, Rod Carew, didn't make his high school baseball team because his coach thought he wasn't a good enough hitter. Since then, through thousands of hours of practice, Carew has won 7 American League batting titles and is one of 13 players ever to get more than 3,000 career hits. The list goes on. Famous author, philosopher, and scholar Leon Uris flunked high school English 3 times. Malcolm Forbes, publisher of Forbes magazine, one of the most successful business publications in the world, did not make the staff of his college newspaper. The editor said he lacked the basic skills of reporting and editorial writing. Stephen DeVore, who founded CyberVision, speaks the Finnish language, considered by language experts to be the most difficult language for Western tongues to learn. Though he mastered this difficult language, he lays no claim to a superior intellect either. "When I was 19, he told an interviewer, "I was selected to go to Finland for 2 years of volunteer work. I had no foreign language ability at that time. In fact, I had nearly flunked out of high school French and Latin. So I thought of myself as having absolutely no ability to learn languages." With this negative attitude, DeVore entered an intensive language program for 2 months before he left for Finland. It was something like 16 hours a day with a group of 10 others. "I finished last in the group," he recalls. DeVore went to Finland, where he spent 5 miserable months unable to communicate. "I couldn't do anything. I was incredibly frustrated. I'd lose patience when people were talking. Then one day, I went to the park, and in the park there was a man giving instructions to his dog in Finnish. The dog obviously understood him and was obeying all of his commands. I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm smarter than a dog. If a dog can understand Finnish, so can I." In the 2 months following this experience, DeVore became fluent in the Finnish language. He learned to speak Finnish so well that he served as a translator for American businessmen and their families traveling to Finland. Buoyed by the accomplishment of learning Finnish, DeVore returned home after 2 years and went back to college, where before he had been a lackluster C student because he was convinced he couldn't learn, he received straight A's and academic scholarships for the rest of his college and graduate school years. Which proves another point about learning, success, and attitude. Once you have successfully learned a subject or skill, it bolsters your confidence in your ability to learn other skills. Once you've proven to yourself that a negative concept you had was wrong, you begin to realize that all of your negative concepts may be wrong. What you couldn't do in the past, you can now do. You can do it because finally you believe you can do it. Breaking the cycle of a negative attitude may not be easy, but once you do, you'll be far less inclined to get back into the cycle. That's why small steps and small accomplishments are so important in pursuing a macro goal. You may look at a map for becoming a neurologist and say, I'll never get through all those math courses. But if you get one A in algebra, you'll realize that you can. Another way of expressing this is that success in learning begets more success. Once you have successfully learned a subject or skill, it bolsters your confidence in your ability to learn other skills. Your past, in which you may have been labeled or labeled yourself as a non-learner, is precisely that, your past. It is not your present. It has little relation to what you are capable of accomplishing now. What has happened to many of us is that we have been conditioned into a negative feedback loop where learning is concerned. The step-by-step accumulation of new skills is the way to break this loop and replace it with a much more positive cycle. Which brings us to the third step in the learning process, the attitude and value that learning takes time and patience. Most of us, at the time we are exposed to our greatest concentration of education, haven't developed the necessary self-discipline skills to be able to take advantage of it. And why should we? We were only children. Excellence, as we've been learning in this neuropsychology of self-discipline program, is based on seasoned learning. Skills like medicine, mathematics, chemistry, dance, law, music, pottery, writing, languages, architecture, masonry, carpentry, the list is endless. All require seasoning, the accumulation of knowledge over time. The perseverance to stick with a task over a long period of time, sometimes decades. The ability to find pleasure in the accomplishment of steps toward a goal, rather than seeking the instantly gratifying quick fix. All these are the hallmarks of the self-disciplined. A wise philosopher, in speaking of the seasoning of a learner, once said, "There are very few human beings who receive knowledge complete and staggering by instant illumination. Most of us acquire it fragment by fragment, on a small scale, by successive developments, cellularly, like a laborious mosaic." One other myth about the acquisition of knowledge has it that you can get too old to learn. This bit of fallacious thinking has been handed down in the aphorism that you can't teach old dogs new tricks. It's worth laying to rest. A classic incident from the life of the great poet Longfellow illustrates the relationship between age and learning. Told by Howard R. Driggs, the story goes, it happened that while the poet, at over 80 years of age, was still teaching at Harvard, one of his appreciative students asked him, "How do you keep so perennially young, Professor Longfellow? We never get tired of your classes. You always have something new and interesting to give." "I've never had that question put to me before," returned the poet. Then, looking out of the window, he said, "You see those two apple trees in the yard? Do you observe any difference between the blossoms on the older tree and those on the younger one?" "No," replied the student. "They look just alike to me." "How do you account for the fact that the old apple tree flowers out as beautifully as does the young one?" persisted the teacher. "Let me tell you the secret. That old tree managed last year to grow enough wood to put forth its new blossoms. Blossoms, you know, always come on the new wood." "Oh, I see," said the young man. "To keep young, one must keep growing." "Yes," came the quiet response. Einstein, in his later years, was asked the secret of his ability to learn. His reply also illustrates the point and importance of lifelong learning. Einstein said, "The more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. The more I realize I don't know, the more I want to learn." Age should be no barrier to the acquisition of new knowledge and skills. If you have the self-discipline to see your efforts through, you can learn anything at any age. Let's now discuss the fourth step in the learning process, a set of tried and proven principles that work together as a system to make learning easy. If you'll turn this cassette over now, we'll introduce you to a very simple yet powerful system to learn effectively at any age, whatever the subject area. A recent movie called Educating Rita beautifully illustrates the points we're going to discuss in the remainder of this session. This film is about a working-class Englishwoman who has a dream about becoming educated. The film tells the story of a personal odyssey as she pursues her vision, her dream, in the face of incredible obstacles. She faces, at one point or another during the story, conflicts with work, with transportation, with her parents, with schedules, with her mentor's desire and ability to teach, with the disdain of other more educated students, and with a husband who wants her to stay home and make babies, not theses. Through it all, she perseveres, driven by the dream of herself as an educated woman, a woman who can discuss important issues, who can commune with the great thinkers and writers who make up such a rich part of her English heritage. She burns with the fire of her vision, a vision rich in dignity and strength. It's a vision she can hear, smell, taste, touch, and see. The actress, Julie Waters, expresses her character's struggle to change, to improve, to better herself, with such credibility that you can see the woman, Rita, change before your very eyes. There was nothing abstract about Rita's quest for education. Each book she read, each class she took, each time she met with her advisor or participated in a class discussion, was a visible step toward the completion of her goal. It was extraordinarily obvious how closely her vision and her process of learning were interconnected. Sometimes that connection is less obvious. So that's what the remainder of this session will speak to: how to recognize the connection between learning and the successful achievement of your goals. Learning is not simply the rote memorization of useless facts, or even useful facts. Of course, we're all aware that in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. But what does that have to do with our vision? The same lack of relationship to vision is often true with our attempts to understand abstract principles, as in mathematics, chemistry, or physics. They are very difficult to learn and use if we cannot see the direct applications to our everyday lives, to the pursuit of our purpose and vision. We ask ourselves, how is this going to help me in achieving my vision? CyberVision founder Steve DeVore recalls signing up for a course in statistics when he was attending graduate school. He hadn't taken the prerequisite higher math courses, but had gotten permission from the instructor to take the course anyway. DeVore's instructor, however, issued a dire warning at the beginning. Without those prerequisite courses, DeVore stood a good chance of failing. But forewarned is forearmed, and DeVore found a way to overcome his lack of preparation. The first week of class, he found himself swamped with mathematical concepts that were abstract and confusing. "The only way I could make sense out of what was going on," he says, "was to take each abstract principle and make it concrete. Instead of talking about X's, Y's, and Z's, I made them into apples and oranges, and I ended up with the second highest grade in the class." "I find this concreteness also ties into vision," DeVore continues. "Whenever you have to learn something that seems beyond your grasp, remember your vision and why you have to learn it. Then it will seem real and vital, and you'll have an easier time dealing with it. Whatever you have to learn, no matter how abstract or detailed the information, if it's necessary for your vision, then you can embody that information with your vision. Then it becomes something real and vital. You can put a handle on it. You have a reference for it." You've been learning the importance of vision all throughout this program, the sensory-rich, detailed kind of vision you created in Session 6 and are continuing to create on a daily basis. Making those visions concrete, you'll recall, sometimes even involved putting clippings or photographs of a desired goal upon the wall. This kind of work to strengthen vision is also at the heart of learning. As I promised earlier, I'm about to introduce you to a powerfully effective, easy-to-learn method of learning that will carry you through the rest of your life. This four-part learning system is the application of certain principles that reveal themselves in the course of our research with self-disciplined achievers. Learning and applying these principles will enable you to approach any subject matter with confidence and thoroughly learn the material no matter how difficult it might be. We call this system mega learning. We use the word mega to connote power, the power to achieve you acquire through the acquisition and application of knowledge. Let me quickly preview each of the four steps and then look at the process in greater detail. First, recognize the need to learn a principle. Second, relate the principle to your personal vision or goal. Third, internalize the principle by relating it to your own experience. And fourth, apply the principle in action. Let's examine each of these four steps in turn. First, recognize your need to learn new information and skills. You cannot reach your goal without getting an education first. This doesn't necessarily mean attending school. It means identifying the key skills and competencies that you must master if you are successfully going to reach your goal. Ask yourself, will I achieve my goal without this knowledge or skill? If your answer is no, then you have a strong motivation for learning. Your learning is now crucial, for without it, your road to achievement is blocked. Learning is a lot easier if you have a specific reason to learn. Once you recognize that you have a need to learn, you've taken the first step toward achieving your goal. Step two is simply asking yourself, how can I use this? How will it help me fulfill my vision? Imagine yourself achieving your goal and using the new knowledge and skills you are about to learn. See how each skill and bit of knowledge applies directly to your future success, no matter how unrelated or trivial it might seem to be in the beginning. This process is akin to putting a jigsaw puzzle together. You have a picture of what you want to achieve on the jigsaw box. Inside the box are hundreds of related but unrelated pieces of the puzzle. You put two pieces together. You pick up a third piece. You toy with it, mentally turning it over, looking at its edges, its contours, its unique characteristics, looking at the ways it might fit into the whole picture. Then comes the aha moment. You see exactly where the new piece of puzzle fits, how the contours of the piece are shaped to fit the pieces already in place. And as you place the piece in the puzzle, you get an idea of what the larger picture will look like. Perhaps you refer back to the picture on the jigsaw box, which is analogous to the mental picture you have of the goal for which you're striving. The very act of studying the information and putting it in its proper place helps you bring the picture on the box to life. The third step in our learning process is internalizing the principle by relating it to your own experience. If you're learning about electrical waveforms and frequency, for example, think about the times you've thrown a pebble into a pond and seen ripples form on the water. The bigger the pebble and the harder you threw it, the bigger and faster the waves would be. In Newtonian physics, you can easily understand the law that states, for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, by remembering how you stand up from a sitting position. Do you just shoot straight up, or do you have to first push your weight down on the chair to stand up? In order to stand up, you have to first push down. That's Newton's law in action. Every time you find an example from your own experience to illustrate a bit of knowledge you're trying to learn, you'll reinforce your understanding of that knowledge. And you'll remember it because it's anchored to something very personal. Every time you think of Newton's law, you'll picture yourself pushing off a chair to stand up. It works for just about any abstract theory you can think of. The fourth critical step in learning is the actual application of the principle you're trying to grasp. Throw pebbles in a pond and watch the action when you're learning waveform theory. Sit down and stand up over and over again until Newton's law is firmly planted in your mind. If you're studying a new language, use the new vocabulary you learn every single day. As you walk down the street or through your living room, try naming every object you see in your new language. Using these four steps to learning will make the experience easier, less frightening, and more fun. You'll make mistakes just as everybody does. But persistent application of the Mega Learning System will pay off in greater understanding, greater memory retention, and a better education overall in whatever it is you're trying to learn. The four steps to enhance learning we've outlined here are similar to and related to the four stages which make up the process of creativity. Our definition of creativity is taking the knowledge and skills you learn and applying it to the realization of your purpose, vision, and goals. To be creative, you have to be armed with knowledge and skills tempered by experience. The first stage in the creative process is preparation. Creative problem solvers consciously collect all the information they can, gathering tools which will help them solve a problem or get a job done. During this stage, if there's a problem to be solved, the person might be perplexed, but at the same time excited about the possibility of coming up with a solution. Stage two is called incubation. Once the research has been done and the necessary information has been collected, the creative person often releases the problem and turns to something else, including rest, relaxation, or physical activity related to the problem. During this stage, the knowledge begins to reform itself below the level of consciousness, shifting and realigning until it becomes a whole. During this stage, tantalizing flashes of insights and glimpses of parts of the final solution may emerge. Stage three is called illumination. This is the moment of discovery. It is the point in time where all you have learned and experienced has been distilled in your mind. The solution or inspiration springs forth almost miraculously. Miraculously, if you don't recognize how much preparation and groundwork you've already laid in stage one. Often this stage is accompanied by an overwhelming feeling of certainty that says, yes, this is the piece of art I want to create. Or yes, this is the product idea I want to explore. Stage four is called verification or revision. This stage takes place again on a conscious level. The details of an experimental process, if you are a scientist, must be worked out. If you're an artist, you must decide whether this picture will be painted in watercolor or oil. This stage involves visible work and rational thinking. It involves drawing from your base of knowledge and fundamental skills to make your work conform to the vision of your creative insight. As you can tell, the knowledge and skills you acquire are the tools for the creative process. The parallels to the simple approach to learning we've outlined here and the process of creativity should also help put to rest the misconception that self-disciplined people are not creative. That discipline involves being married to lists and systems to the exclusion of freedom and creativity. On the contrary, creativity is the byproduct of a disciplined, well-informed mind. A mind that is using its storehouse of knowledge to solve problems and achieve goals. The more you learn, the more creative you can become. If your heart is set on becoming a professional musician, you can hardly be expected to know how to compose a symphony until you've become an expert in reading music and have studied music history. If you want to become a heart surgeon, you can't expect to pioneer new techniques in heart surgery until you've thoroughly mastered all the existing techniques. If you want to start a business, you must first study how other businesses are run, and then make your own decisions about how your company will work. If the realization of your vision requires the mastery of new knowledge and skills, I hope that learning will now be a stepping stone rather than a barrier to the creative realization of your goals. In our next and last session, you'll learn how to develop the twin pillars of the self-disciplined character, persistence and perseverance. And you'll be well equipped to begin your long and fruitful journey towards the goal you've chosen as your most important ambition.